You guys, welcome to a very special Patreon episode of Beyond the Blinds. It is me, Troy McKeedy.
And Kelly Williams.
And this week we're doing something a little different than we normally do. Obviously, you guys know that we have been obsessively following this Diddy situation for years. And we mentioned last week that we were both reading the court documents and just how crazy it was. And I thought it would be fun to just actually devote an entire Patreon episode to the 73-page court document, which is public. And when we post this episode, we're going to post the doc as well, so you can read it, take stuff from it if you want, make notes, do whatever you want. But yeah, we're just gonna go, we are going down the hill today. You are in a courtroom, basically,
with two lawyers who don't know shit about shit, but we know when things are sound bad.
I know what a RICO is now. I know what money laundering is. I know what trafficking is. I mean, I'm pretty much a lawyer. So you're in good hands. I'm very excited to do this. I feel like since reading these docs, I've had like a lot of takeaways. Obviously, I know you have too. Stuff that I found really shocking and surprising. What is the most surprising thing so far to you after reading all of it?
First off, I'm surprised that this may actually take Diddy down. I know that you and I have really been like, nothing will do it, nothing will do it. But sitting down and reading everything and also learning about like RICO and, you know, that's what finally got John Gotti. So it just sounds like this is what is finally going to get Diddy.
I agree. The RICO stuff, I told you I didn't even know what that was. Mm-hmm. I had never heard that phrase unless it was a name. I didn't know that that was a thing. And now I'm like, just, it's just so crazy. And I guess for me, and obviously we're going to get into it, but a really shocking takeaway was him just flippantly admitting the gun thing with Jennifer Lopez. I was just like, whoa, like he just like was so casual about it.
For sure. I have that, but also that the woman named Christina Karam, mm-hmm. how she was the one allegedly like drugging all the bottles. And in my mind, it never occurred to me that like, those are the girls' bottles. These are Diddy's bottles. I don't know why in my head, like, I don't know. That was just like a light bulb moment, I guess. Like, of course that it's going to be these two separate designated areas. And like, it sucks so bad that this specific lawsuit shows how much women are also involved in these acts.
It's so much like R. Kelly that it's actually insane.
Yeah.
To have women surrounding him, doing this stuff for him. And they paint in the court documents that she is very much like his Ghislaine Maxwell.
And the picture that they use is the one TMZ published saying Diddy like having a tough time, house manager is there to console him.
Yeah.
It was the actual back grid image of her.
Yeah. And just like the contradiction of her being like, you know, when this when Lil Rod was basically trying to come to her to say like, listen, I'm uncomfortable, you know, I don't like being around him naked and whatever. She was like, oh, that's just Diddy, like get over it. But then she was so uncomfortable with it that she would like leave the room. And it's like, well, obviously you know that this is wrong because it is literally making you uncomfortable. But then she gaslit him into thinking he was like crazy for even bringing it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this. I know we've never done an episode like this, but I don't think anyone else wants to read 70 pages of something. So happy to be here.
And I guess, so before we really get into the nitty gritty, I feel like it would be a good idea at the beginning to just kind of go through some of the names and the people involved in this. So, of course, Lil Rod, I refer to him in my notes as Mr. Jones because that's what they call him in the court document, and it was just easier. So we have Lil Rod, the music producer slash music writer. He was working with Diddy on this album, on the Love album. We also have Diddy himself, of course. His son, Justin, is a big part of this whole situation. Lucien Charles Grange. We also have, of course, Christina Karam, who we just mentioned, his Ghislaine, if you will. And then a lot of like music executives. We're going to get to a section of this where we talk a lot about the parties, the yacht parties, the industry parties. And this idea that, like, Diddy was just having like these crazy, over the top, extravagant parties and just calling them listening parties. And the higher ups were the ones paying for it and they were sponsoring it. So where that incriminates them is that they knew that these parties that they were sponsoring, that there were underage sex workers there, and they were sponsoring the events.
Yeah, there is a something from this court document. It says Mr. Deal said that these parties, you knew that they were going to drug you, basically. Like if you went to these parties, you had to be extra cautious and make sure you did not drink the girl, the ladies' alcohol.
Right. And this is people from like Motown Records being
Right.
like, oh, don't drink the roofie bottles. Those are for the girls so that Diddy can rape them later. Like, that is absolutely fucking insane. I guess it's not shocking just based on what we know, but to see it like written down on a court document, you can't deny it. It's not a blind item, it's not gossip. Like, this is real, you know?
And I guess we should say, obviously, we're going to be talking a lot of sexual assault, a lot of rape. So just trigger warning at the very top of this episode.
Yeah, for literally everything possible, like murder, sex abuse, drug stuff. It's a lot.
I guess to start with Rodney or Lil Rod, Mr. Jones, whatever you, however you want to refer to him, I didn't realize that he was like a child prodigy. And right when I read that, of course, Justin Bieber popped into my head. And it's like these fucking kids are just born talented. And then unfortunately, people take advantage of that talent. And doing like a little more research on him, he seems to come from like a good family, solid background, like just a good kid who's really good at what he does.
Yeah, and he seems like, because a lot of what he talks about in the court docs, like he was really, it seems genuinely shocked by a lot of like what goes on at these parties and stuff. Like he gets the vibe that he was very naive before he really like got super deep into this whole world. And obviously Diddy knew that. In his court documents, he does specifically state that he's a Christian. And that he's like a church-going person, and that he's a heterosexual. Like he's very like straight and narrow.
It seems
He's
like
not
he's probably never even like touched a drug.
right. So he went from being like basically Hank Hill to being drugged and waking up next to sex workers naked and like doing all this crazy, like helping racketeer and get guns for him and shit. Like he went from being like this normal person to like a mob boss's assistant, basically. So Motown Records is obviously very much involved in this. Universal music group, Love Records, which is Diddy's record label. And then a lot of the stuff that happens in the documents happens at Chalice Recording Studio. That's where the person was shot that we're about to talk about here in a second. But this is like some serious shit. Like the involvement of Motown, Universal, and Diddy's record label is wild. Like, that to me is where this is like, it's already crazy, but the stuff that they were involved in is completely undeniable.
Right. And I know we're jumping ahead. Like, we promise we will go through the document, but at one point, Diddy's outwardly saying, no one can touch me. No one will do anything to me in this industry. Like, and that's something Troy and I have obviously said in different episodes. Like, he's so powerful, but he's also like just so aware of his power and has no money, no issue like flexing it.
Yeah.
It's he's literally like his character from Get Him to the Greek, but a like billion times more evil, obviously.
Yeah. I keep saying that he's Tony Soprano, and I'm not even being sarcastic. He really is a mob boss, kind of moonlighting as a musician, pretty much, like how he lives. So the first like real major event that takes place in this lawsuit is the shooting. We kind of talked about it in passing in our pop culture episode, but we haven't like really gotten into it. So basically, on September 12th of 2022, Diddy held a writing camp, which is something that he has all the time, and it's really just an excuse to get a bunch of people together and do drugs and have sex.
Well, he's one of the greatest lyricists of all time, don't you know?
Like, not a writing camp from the person who wrote We Can't Stop. And then apparently there was like some huge argument that took place at the studio between Diddy and G, the person who was shot. The argument then moved from the studio to a restroom, which is also very odd that he like took him in the bathroom and shut the door to fight with him. Rodney was sitting like 2 feet away from the bathroom door. He heard a gunshot, and he said in his court docs that he went into a state of trial. He said in the documents that he went into a state of shock and he thought that he would be shot next, obviously. And then after the shooting ended, like a big crowd formed around the bathroom, which means a bunch of people saw. There were a lot of witnesses that saw that this person was absolutely shot in a bathroom, not outside. The bathroom was covered in blood. There are pictures in the documents that show the bathroom is bl a bloody mess. There's like bloody clothes and shit in there. Like, you can't deny that somebody was shot in that room.
No, for sure. And then it goes into say Mr. Jones like dropped everything, ran to G because no one was helping him. I
Yeah.
don't think the Combs family cared whether this person lived or died because the way that they have like LAPD under their thumb.
That's what's so shocking about him. And I guess just like in general, with Hollywood in general, like the way that people are just so comfortable with somebody that they're close to dying just for the sake of them not getting in a little trouble.
It doesn't make sense.
Like, Diddy is like literally anybody can die. I don't give a fuck. Even my mom.
I mean, even the story that came out about Travis Scott just leaving his producer who was having a heart attack,
Yeah.
being like, oh, sorry, this is like annoying me. Gotta go.
Feeling my buzz that you're having a literal heart attack on the floor. So he ends up lifting, he gave him CPR. He was applying pressure to the gunshot wound. Everybody's just standing and watching this happen. Nobody's trying to call the police. Nobody's calling a paramedic. He lifts G, puts him on the toilet. And in the photos, the toilet itself is covered in blood. So you can see like that he did happen. And he was given instructions by Diddy to basically say that it was a drive-by shooting and that he and his son had nothing to do with it. And they just like bounced. They were like, bye.
And what's crazy is the very next page, it's from CBS.com, man shot outside party at Hollywood recording studio.
And like, for them, this is the thing about Diddy, and I say this all the time. He's just such a messy queen. Like, he's not really strategic or smart or good at this kind of stuff. He's lucky that he has a lot of people around him that just like cover shit up for him. Cause like the best lie that he could come up with after literally shooting a man was that it was a drive-by shooting in the middle of the day that nobody outside witnessed. But then when you think about it, it's like he doesn't really have to come up with good stories because the cops did cover this up for him.
And we'll get into Mr. Muhammad later.
Yeah. So the next part of the doc is the sexual assault stuff, is where that all starts. So Mr. Jones alleged that Diddy would violently grope his genitals and anus, that he was constantly touched by him, that he was forced to sit in the room with him while he walked around naked. Like in the middle of their conversations, Diddy would just start undressing and like be nude. He would watch him get nude massages. He also forced him to sit in the bathroom and watch him shower through his clear shower. And again, like this is a man who considered himself to not only be straight, but like very Christian. And he literally did gospel music before working with Diddy. Like he was plucked straight from like the church. And then all of a sudden is being forced to watch this man get oils rubbed on him while he's nude.
And Christina would always say, like, that's him showing he likes you. Like, you should be honored that he wants to do this stuff to you.
She said, that's just Diddy being Diddy.
Oh.
Yeah, she tried to downplay it. She tried to downplay the groping of the genitals. She called it, quote, friendly horseplay. And she told him, yeah, that this was his way of showing that he like really is comfortable with you. And it, like I said earlier, it's just ironic because this is all stuff that she herself would get up and leave the room for. And of course, later he realized, like, oh, she was grooming me. Like, she was helping groom me.
But her leaving the room, I don't think that's just about feeling uncomfortable. That's like, I didn't see it happen. Maybe that's her way of like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know
Totally.
what happened in those rooms.
I didn't witness anything.
Oh, see, she's smart.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She at least she knew how to cover her bases.
Oh.
But yeah, he said that he believed her sole purpose and her job was to basically brainwash him into like accepting this world, which worked because he did start participating in stuff against his will, obviously, but he did start participating in it.
One of the other things that I found interesting about they refer to her as KK, so I'll just call her KK. Is that she required all the employees to keep drugs on them. And that was really insane to me. So, this is on page 30 of the doc if you're reading along or trying to follow along. But from the butler to the chef to the housekeepers, they had to walk around with a pouch, a bag filled with cocaine, GHB, ecstasy, marijuana gummies from 100 to 250 milligrams each, and Tushy. Tucci, Tuci. It's a pink drug that's a combination of ecstasy and cocaine. And again, like that made me think of Get Him to the Greek with like the Jeffrey.
Yeah, and she said that, well, it said in the court docs that like basically at any moment that Diddy wanted any drug, it needed to be available to him no matter who was with him. So you're just carrying a literal buffet of narcotics so that this psychotic narcissist can have his like pick of every drug that exists at any moment that you just so happen to be there.
I need to lean in quick. Fonzworth Bentley, if you're listening, like now's your time because I can't even imagine what you had to car carry in that umbrella.
My God. Oh my God. You know, I honestly can't even fathom what he has seen.
He's like holding the umbrella over Diddy while Diddy shoots people.
Literally, but literally. And obviously, in our previous episode, we talked about the Stevie J of it all, but we didn't really get super deep into it. So for whatever reason, Mr. Jones did idolize Stevie J as a music producer. And Diddy obviously knew that this guy not only idolized Stevie, but idolized him and took advantage of that. And was like, hey, look, all not only me, but all of your faves suck dick and do lots of drugs and have sex with prostitutes. Everybody you love. So if we're all doing it, you should do it.
And I have to say, the notes on this court doc are blind items themselves, right? Like, he's a Philadelphia rapper who dated Nicki Minaj. Obviously, that's Meek Mill. He performed at the Super Bowl and had a successful Vegas residency. Duh. And just so you guys know, that comes from Mr. Combs informed Mr. Jones that he had engaged in sexual intercourse with rapper from Philly who dated Nicki Minaj and R&B singer who performed at the Super Bowl and had successful Vegas residency along with Stevie J. Why do you think
Now,
they had to like redact those names? Was there just no physical proof of it?
that I mean, I guess that could have been it because all of this is just coming from his word. But it's just funny the way that they chose to redact them was so, it's like you really have to be Nell to not be able to know who these people are. Like, even especially Usher.
Right.
He just performed at the Super Bowl. It was like days before. And I also wanted to add too, like, we had kind of talked about this, but like, so obviously it had come out not even like hours after the court docs that the person in those videos was not Stevie J and that it was a porn star named Knockout. And Knockout publicly confirmed it on his own accounts, like, this, you know, that's me, that's one of my videos, blah blah blah. And like a lot of people were saying that it means he's lying. And I don't necessarily think that that's what this means. I almost feel whether it was Stevie J in the video or not, the whole point is that Diddy was sending him porn.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And he's just showing what he was sent.
Yeah, like he's not saying that, like, yeah, it was Stevie J. He's saying Diddy sent me this and told me that it was Stevie J in the video fucking some guy and that I should do it too because he's doing it. Like, I think that he just maybe didn't think that he would figure it out, which obviously he didn't figure it out. It was the internet that figured it out.
Right. Either way, it's very inappropriate.
Yeah, I mean, either way, it's wrong. Like, whether it is Stevie in the video or not. So then we jump to this infamous Thanksgiving assault. So on Thanksgiving Day of 2022, Mr. Jones was with Diddy at his house in Miami. Young Miami was there with her cousin. And apparently, Diddy was like super intoxicated and offering everybody cocaine, to which Mr. Jones denied. So he said, like, I didn't want the drugs. And Diddy got very angry that he wouldn't do drugs, basically. So he got up, he goes to the bathroom, he's followed into the bathroom by Young Miami's cousin. And there are photos of the exact party in the court documents. So apparently she bursts into the room and she starts groping him. She's like groping his genitals. And he believes that Diddy sent her into the bathroom basically to assault him. So she drops to her knees, starts forcing oral sex on him. He pushes her away, leaves the bathroom. And this is the craziest part. So apparently she still wouldn't accept that he like didn't want a blowjob. So she follows him out to the room and she starts undressing. She gets naked and starts trying to like ride him in front of a room full of people. And we now know we're gonna talk about it later in the doc, but like, you know, she's like on his payroll as a sex worker.
Yeah.
So it's like, I guess that's her job.
And she's probably like, shit, I might not get paid if I don't do this. Like, I'm not trying to, I think what she did is wrong, obviously. But like, we also don't know what was said to her, like in the living room. And I'm sure she doesn't feel super safe in the situation. You know what I mean?
For sure. I mean, it's like obviously what she was doing was like really wrong, but this, I almost feel like you can't judge what a person says no to or doesn't say no to when they fear that somebody will murder them.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? Especially as a woman. Like, this is a grown ass man who basically is like unable to say no to him. Like, he's having sex with people against his will, doing drugs that he doesn't want to do. Like, I couldn't imagine as like, I don't know, a girl who's just like, I don't know. I'm not trying to make excuses, but you know what I mean? Like, it's scary and it's easier to like judge from the outside, I feel.
For sure. So then
What's
we
the
jump to the Trafficking and Victims Protection Act. Throughout his time with Mr. Combs, Mr. Jones was transported from California to New York, Florida, and the United States Virgin Islands. During this time, Mr. Jones was forced to solicit sex workers and perform sex acts to the pleasure of Mr. Combs. On or about February 4th, 2023, Mr. Combs forced Mr. Jones to bring prostitutes and sex workers back to his home in Miami, Florida. And also, there is a note that says this writer is in possession of the video and will provide a copy to the court. So that note is on so many of pages of this court doc that I'm curious to see what the court will want to see videos of and see if that's also like sent shown to the public.
Yeah, his evidence, by the way, is like wildly damning.
Yeah.
It's like crazy. Like, he really had, because everything was filmed, everything was recorded, every party, there's video, which, are you kidding? Is he really that fucking stupid that he has parties with underage sex workers and he's posing with them?
I think it's dumb, and also him just knowing he's untouchable.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, to be so cocky that you are posing in these pictures and videos with your son. Are you kidding me? But yeah, he did. I mean, and the fact that, like, at this point, by the, what is this, like February 4, 2023, he's now been drugged by him like a bunch of times. Like, he's just used now to being drugged by Diddy.
It's so crazy. Yeah, it says 2 days before the February 2nd incident, Mr. Jones believes he was drugged by Mr. Combs. He can recall waking up naked, dizzy, confused. He was in bed with two sex workers and Mr. Combs. It's just.
He has memory of aimlessly walking around the house because he was like drugged and didn't know what was going on. Now, the part of the sex trafficking thing that I found the most interesting was the booby trap of it all in Miami at the bar. So he was forced to solicit sex workers from this bar in Miami called Booby Trap on the River. And on this occasion, he was also forced to have sex so that Sean could watch. So apparently, Diddy would provide him with this like bad boy baseball cap. And it was his job to then go to the bar. And if he was wearing the hat, it was a sign to all of the like sex workers basically at the bar that Diddy was going to be looking for girls to party. And everybody in the staff knew the signal because they had been doing it for so long. And yeah, so that meant that he was in town and he was recruiting and needed girls for the night.
The way that that just made so much sense to me, like, of course he's wearing a bad boy's hat, and that, like, that's the sign. Because in Nashville, I always heard at Kid Rock's bar, there are like a lot of coke dealers go there, and that's why you see maybe like Jimmy Fallon or Morgan Wallen, hanging out at the Kid Rock bar. And now I'm like, what was their signal? Like, how do you know that that person's the coke dealer? You know what I mean?
It's so crazy. And it's like crazy to think that you can be sitting at a bar in Miami, just like having a margarita, and there's a whole operation happening around you for Diddy. For Diddy. Like, your server is leaving her shift to go fuck Diddy at his recording studio. Like, that is insane.
Honestly, we have so many listeners from Florida, like Miami area. I would love if you're comfortable commenting on our Patreon, obviously, but if this was like a known secret, because I feel like big cities just have known secrets. I wonder if Booby Trap is one of those.
Yeah, I would love to know because what? Like, that is just so crazy to me.
So, just some things that Diddy promised Mr. Jones. He promised him a Grammy for Producer of the Year for the Love album. He offered him $250,000 to purchase all instruments that he wanted. He promised him ownership of his $20 million property on Star Island. He also promised access to record label executives like defendants Lucien Charles Grange and Ethiopia H. I don't want to butcher her last name, but Ethiopia H. So these were just promises, Mr. Jones, if you continue to do these things, you will be rewarded, basically.
In Ethiopia, she is the former CEO of Motown Records, the parent company of Love Records. So she was like a real big part of this as well. And it's funny because it says that he would like offer him the world and be like, yeah, like I'm gonna get you this and get you that and whatever. And then he would randomly be like, no, I'm not. And I hate you and I'm gonna kill you. And if you ever fuck with me, I'll kill you. And he told him, he was like, listen, I'm so willing to kill you that I will literally, like, I'll kill my mother. And he said, quote, that he would be willing to kill his mother in order to get what he wants so he wouldn't think twice about killing Mr. Jones. If that doesn't tell you everything you need to know about Diddy, like, that to me is like just that's Diddy, that is Hollywood. When you hear that people like that these family members just like die, or like, I don't know, if that just sent a chill down my spine that he said that.
Totally agree. And he also threatened to eat Mr. Jones's face, which I believe like he would,
Yeah.
just to make a point.
1000% I believe that a coked out Diddy would threaten to eat your face. I really do. I also don't know if you saw this or not. This is like a side thing, but the Fat Jewish has been going on podcasts again and talking about the story that we've talked about on this show, which, if you haven't, I've mentioned it now like so many times, I feel like it's like a running gag. You're probably taking a shot as I say it. But basically, the Fat Jewish went to Diddy's house for a party. He was like walking around, and to make a long story short, he opened up a room where he saw Diddy and a bunch of beautiful black men basically having sex. And he went on a bunch of shows and told that story. Well, now that all of this stuff is out, I saw a TikTok the other day of him saying that Diddy reached out to him after he told that story and told him, you need to redact it. You need to tell people that it didn't happen. Like he threatened him, which only
Wow.
further proves the truth of that story, you know?
Right, totally.
I was like, oh my God, not that story having a full circle moment. So on July 2nd of 2023, Diddy had a listening party at his house. And the guest list included some sex workers. It says that at least five of the sex workers were under the age of 16. Chris Brown was also there, allegedly, and his son, Justin. So at 7 a.m., Sean requested female sex workers, which meant that Mr. Jones would then need to solicit them. So an hour later, several sex workers show up, and this is in addition to the underage girls that are already there. So all the women were then forced to drink liquor that was laced, and Mr. Jones tried to leave, and Sean ended up forcing him to stay. And he went as far as to take his keys so that he couldn't leave. And he forced him to drink the laced liquor. And at that point, he recalled passing out and waking up at 4 in the morning with sex workers in his bed. Like the forced, all of this is insane, but forcing people around you to solicit prostitutes for you is insane. Like, go get me some prostitutes, go find them within the hour. Like, that's fucking wild to me.
Well, as I like read this, because at first I was like, why is Mr. Jones like Diddy's target, right? Like, why is he so again? And obviously Mr. Jones is saying, like, I don't want to fuck you. I don't want to fuck Stevie J. I don't want to fuck anyone. I'm just trying to do my job. And I'm starting to think that maybe Diddy thought Mr. Jones wouldn't say anything because he'd be like, wait, what did I wake up? What did I do last night? Like, what did Diddy record me doing? And Mr. Jones is like, Uno reverse card. I'm filming everything, actually.
Yeah. Oh God, the filming of everything. We're gonna get to that because that is also a fucking.
And just really quick, going to like Chris Brown being allegedly involved in this. When we did our episode on Chris, like there were so many blinds about him trying to get with younger girls, like illegally aged girls. So many blinds that Troy and I did not read some of them.
Yeah. And it's just like, it just makes you think, with especially with the amount of this is Diddy. So he's connected to everybody, you know, like he's not a niche rapper. He has connections to every single musician basically that exists. So when you think about all of the rappers and the people that are like able to go to his house and be debaucherous and do crazy shit, people like Drake, you know, Millie Bobby Brown loving Drake, Billie Eilish loving Drake, like, it's just insane to think about the secrets that he has.
And now I'm like, of course Chris Brown was staying at Diddy's after the whole, Rihanna assault stuff. This is making just so much more sense. And again, in this court document, there is a picture of Diddy kissing an underage girl. Like, there's evidence of this.
Yeah, the pictures blew me away.
Me too. And yeah, I'm sorry I like shit on this being like, oh, it's just another thing.
I mean, honestly, Before reading it, I knew that it was going to be bad, but before reading it, I didn't know that the evidence was so damning. I thought it was like going to be more rumor based, like it's always been. But this is like, this man was like filming everything, like literal pictures of a bloodbath in the bathroom. Like you can't deny it, you know?
Now would be a good time to let you know that this episode is sponsored by Quince. You guys have heard Troy and I talk about Quince many a times. We love it so much, and we want you to be able to enjoy the luxury that Quince gives you at a good price. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. So, as I said, you know, Troy and I are big fans of Quince. One thing I am is a sheet snob. I am a snob when it comes to what my sheets are like, and to me, it's the most important part of sleeping. Quince has bamboo sheets that are perfect. They make it so you're not like a sweaty sleeper. I don't know if that's TMI here, but yes, I do sweat in my sleep, and Quince has helped that problem stop, which we all love. So indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/blinds for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/blinds to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Again, that's quince.com/blinds. This episode is also sponsored by ZocDoc. You know, when you get cornered by that aunt at a family gathering and you feel like you have to bend the truth? You know, the one who asks when you're getting married or what's going on with that promotion or why you still haven't moved out of mom and dad's basement, only for her to not really listen and just judge you? While you have to grin and bear it with your family, you shouldn't feel that way when talking to your doctor about that rash that weirdly looks like your high school crush, or that maybe you've had one pizza too many times a week or something else. Enter ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who make you feel comfortable and actually listen to you. And we're not talking about a few, we're talking about thousands of doctors, all with verified patient reviews, so you can make sure the vibes are vibing before you ever meet IRL. With ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. So for me, I actually have a really big fear of the doctors. I hate going to the doctors. People hate whenever I'm like hurt because I will not go to the doctors, or that was the case until I found ZocDoc. This takes away a lot of anxiety. You know, I don't have to go in and talk to anyone. I can talk to them from my couch. And I really like it. I like using it better than the typical go into the office, deal with all of that stuff. So go to ZocDoc.com/blinds and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/blinds, ZocDoc.com/blinds.
50 high school senior girls descend on Mobile, Alabama every summer to compete for a massive cash prize. It isn't Survivor. It's one of America's most lucrative scholarship competitions for teen girls. It's been around for 7 decades. Now you'll hear what took place behind the scenes. From Pineapple Street Studios in Wondery comes The Competition.
Host Shima Olieyi was Nevada's contestant 20 years ago. Now she is returning as a judge to find out what 2 weeks of 50 of the country's most ambitious teens can tell us about girlhood in America. What happens when the competitors are thrown into the deep end with the best and brightest? And how does surviving the competition prepare them for everything that comes after?
Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
So all of this brings us to Cuba Gooding Jr. Mr. Jones believes that Mr. Combs was grooming him to pass off to his friends. This fear became reality when Mr. Combs introduced Mr. Jones to Cuba Gooding Jr. while they were on Mr. Combs's yacht. During the introduction, Mr. Combs suggested that Cuba get to know Mr. Jones better. He then left them alone in a makeshift studio on a yacht. And there's a photo provided of Diddy and Cuba Gooding Jr. moments before the assault happened. As evidenced by a video of which screenshots are embedded, Cuba Gooding Jr. began touching, groping, and fondling Mr. Jones's leg, his upper inner thigh near his groin, the small of his back near his buttocks, and his shoulders. Mr. Jones said he was uncomfortable and he started to lean away. He rejected the advances, but Cuba Gooding Jr. did not stop until Mr. Jones forcibly pushed him away. And there are pictures of Cuba Gooding Jr. like with his arm around Mr. Jones, like really trying to pull him in close. Cuba Gooding Jr., what the fuck?
And like the fact that this isn't the first time we've heard of him like force groping people just adds fuel to this already insane fire. Like it's so
you're telling me Mr. Snow Dogs is this like connected in the underground grossness of Hollywood? He's not someone who would pop into my head immediately. Like radio?
Jerry Maguire, Cuba Gooding Jr. Yeah, I know.
Because he has always played up like, I'm just one of the good guys. I don't know.
Right. And again, those fucking damning ass photos. Like, I mean, he must have been walking around with those, like, you know, those like Snapchat, like Ray-Bans. Because I don't know how he's like getting all of these like insanely incriminating pictures, or I guess everybody is just so fucked up that they don't care.
Well, it sounds like Diddy kept being like, film this. No, make sure you have this on film. I want this on film.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of, that leads us to the production of the Love album, which, how sad are we all that we're not going to be able to hear the Love album? I bet it's not going to come out at this point. So there was an implication that Diddy hired Mr. Jones under a work-for-hire agreement, and that he was not compensated basically for any of the time that he spent working on the album. It says Mr. Jones attempted to work with Sean to secure his publishing and royalty rights for the work that he did. He only offered him $29,000 for 13 months of work, thousands of hours of time spent on 9 completed songs on the album. He was willing to take $50,000, which he still believed was less than what he deserved, but Sean wouldn't agree to it. And it says Mr. Jones felt the only way that he could get fairly compensated was to go public. And when he did, that's when he started receiving this onslaught of threatening, abusive text messages from Stevie J and DeForest Taylor, who is apparently A&R at Love Records. And I guess at one point, this is when he threatened to eat his face if he didn't comply. And I guess there was another incident where Sean forced him to watch as he like displayed all his guns and like talked about how he's killed people and how he's gotten away with shooting people and he'll do it again. Like, terrifying.
And that's when he shared that allegedly J-Lo carried the gun into the club for him and passed him the gun after he got into an altercation with another person. So this is all about the Shine shooting from, what, 1999?
Mm-hmm.
And the shooting in Chalice Record Studio confirmed Mr. Combs' statements. These statements reinforced Mr. Jones' fear of Mr. Combs and strengthened Mr. Combs' dominions and control of Mr. Jones. You know, he's terrified of Diddy. He felt like he couldn't tell him no. And that's when we're introduced to Mr. Muhammad. And just really quick, Mr. Combs conducts his staff to always contact Mr. Muhammad if they're ever pulled over in Miami or California upon information and belief. So allegedly it's believed that Mr. Muhammad spoke with LAPD after G was shot. LAPD witnessed the blood in the restroom, but they went with the bogus claim that the shooting of G occurred outside the studio. And that was all thanks to Mr. Muhammad's connection with law enforcement. LAPD spent hours in CRS, and that's the recording studio, after the shooting of G, yet there were no arrests. Mr. Jones witnessed the LAPD in the restroom pictured above, but again, no arrests were made. And the morning of the shooting, Mr. Jones and several others arrived at the studio, and G's blood was still on the floor of the restroom, but Diddy hired a cleaning crew to clean it up.
Okay, I have several questions. First of all, do you think that Jennifer Lopez is going to have to talk about this publicly?
I don't know how she can't, especially if this goes to trial. Like, J-Lo has been able to kind of push that night, you know, in the way rear view of her career. But I don't know how she can't. But I guess Paul Bettany didn't need to talk about him saying he would, like, burn Amber Heard alive and then throw her in the ocean. So who knows?
Oh, God. That is true. I mean, I kind of feel like I don't know how she couldn't. Especially because, like, this was such a big part of her career at that time. Like, it was everywhere, you know? Like, it was, like, the running gag of the country. Some kind of joke about, like, in the way that Britney getting married for however many hours was, like, a run, like, the late night show. Everybody was making jokes about Diddy and J-Lo and that damn gun.
I feel like if she doesn't want it brought up, she can never bring up the green Versace dress again. Because whenever she brings that up, people are like reminded she was with Diddy and then are reminded about this.
Yeah, and it's crazy because Cassie also said in her lawsuit that Diddy would make her carry guns. And that she was forced to carry guns into public places, so like nightclubs and stuff. And that is so insane. And it just shows the how he feels about the women in his life. And I don't know. I think that, like, there's just so much crazy shit that J-Lo could say. But the thing about her is that she also is just hanging by a fucking thread when it comes to her reputation and the stuff that she's been involved in. Like, I bet there's a lot of stuff that she wishes she could have been more honest about in her life, but she can't because she is the product of men like Tommy Mottola and, you know, all of these, like, slimy dudes, you know? Like, I don't know. It's just crazy. But that part of it really shocked me. Oh, my second question. Who is the Fahim Muhammad of Atoll? Now, this is where this gets, like, really beyond insane, is the involvement of Mr. Muhammad.
My first thought was real life Ray Donovan.
Yeah.
And a lot of this really is like blind items and shows. Obviously, this is real life. I'm very aware that this is real life, but like, it's like blind items coming to life and even shows like Ray Donovan. And you're like, wow, there really are just Hollywood hitmen.
So for those of you who don't know, Fahim Muhammad was there when Michael Jackson died. He was the second person on the scene, allegedly, when Michael passed away. And he said that when he entered the room, the doctor was there giving him CPR, and he somehow weaseled his way into Michael's life, this is what's so weird about him. He became the head of security for Michael Jackson only a year after graduating college. He was like literally a kid, had never done a job like that really before, had no experience, and all of a sudden was the head of security for the king of pop. It's weird.
Who in his family works for the LAPD and how high up are they?
He's so scary. He scares me.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about him anymore.
Well, let me just also very quickly add, because this is like a part of the whole thing, that he kind of recently went on the internet and basically, to make a long story short, he gifted his son 40 acres of land for his birthday. His son is like 12 or 13 or something. So he gifted his son 40 acres of land. And who's the first person to congratulate him? Of course, it's fucking Diddy. And it turns out, not only does he actually owned like 180 acres of this land. He just gave his son some of it. It is a stone's throw from the Mexican border. It's, you can literally see the border from this land. So it's just very odd.
Diddy's like, a lot of lawsuits are coming our way. It's time for you to get some land that people don't want to dig up.
He's like, build us a bunker, daddy.
Either a bunker or like a grave.
Yeah, obviously. And I honestly, I think that he, so like when Michael Jackson died, and this is like coming back into the news, but this was a thing that was like kind of talked about, that Michael Jackson changed his will right before he died, which was like very odd. Mm-hmm. And Michael was known for having this like list of people, including like Tommy Mottola and all these like industry people that he believed were like either trying to kill him or steal his money. But he had said like, if I die, I believe that one of these people on this list like killed me. And I believe that Michael Jackson was murdered. I will say that. And his family, like the Jacksons, have said like there was no way that he legally changed his will, because where they said he was to have changed it, he wasn't. Like they were like, oh, he was in LA on this date and he updated his will. But his family was like, oh no, actually he was in New York and he couldn't have been there that day. So that's not true. And he added men from his death list to his will.
Wow.
Why would he do that? Like, why would he add somebody to his will that he also has listed as somebody that he thinks would murder him?
That's crazy.
Yeah. So that whole thing is just fucking insane. And I believe that Mr. Muhammad was involved somehow. And yeah, this, and also Michael was coming after Sony before he died. Like he had been pretty.
So I think know that
scares me. Very scary.
At least they'll need to pay $5 if they want to hear us and kill us.
Muhammad, please.
So then this jumps to the parties that I was talking about, like, before, at the start of this episode, where it literally says, it's no secret that Mr. Combs had specific bottles of alcohol designated for females and other bottles designated for his staff, his artists, and himself. This fact was detailed by former artists and bodyguards of Mr. Combs. So it was very, like, known that if you go to a Diddy party, your drinks could be spiked. As a sponsor of these events, defendant Grange has a duty and obliged to ensure that sex workers and underage girls were not present and that Mr. Combs was not spiking the alcohol. On a YouTube channel, The Art of Dialogue, former bodyguard Gene Deal exposed Mr. Combs' pill mixing method used to spike cranberry juice and orange juice. So even if someone was like, you know what, I'm not drinking tonight, I want to be safe, it doesn't matter, because even the orange juice are spiked with ecstasy, allegedly.
And Lucian, so he's the CEO of Universal Music, and he also claimed in his lawsuit that Lucian would come over to Diddy's house and they would disappear into Diddy's bedroom for hours and hours and hours. And that was just like a common thing. So it's also wild to think that, like, on top of the fact that he's like trafficking and doing all this shit, he's also fucking like label owners, like executives. And like, they're also keeping his secrets because they're fucking like Diddy is fucking the owner of Universal Music. Like, I just, like, can't even wrap my head around it. Allegedly.
Yeah, again, this is just to add to it. Miss Corum instructs her staff to lace champagne, De Leon and Ciroc liquor bottles with ecstasy and other illicit drugs. A lot of this is about, like, disappearing and drugging people, sex parties, underage girls. Yeah.
There's a part where it says, as the chief of staff, KK was instrumental in organizing and executive the RICO enterprise as follows. So Stevie J, his job, so she was in charge of this like kind of group of people that were like the umbrella around Diddy that made everything work. So Stevie J was in charge of recruiting sex workers, and he would attend the parties and the freak-offs that Diddy would throw. Justin Combs also solicited prostitutes, underage girls, and sex workers, and would engage in the freak-offs as well. Brendan Paul worked as Mr. Combs' mule. He acquired and distributed drugs and guns for him. Frankie Centella worked along Brandon. While Brandon acquired and distributed drugs and guns, Frankie would carry money and payments for the guns and drugs. Moy Bon would hire sex workers and attend the parties. And apparently while traveling with Sean, Mr. Jones discovered that he had like all over the house. And he believed basically what we have been saying for years, which is that Diddy was filming politicians, label executive owners, obviously other music people, and just like the elite engaging in illegal activity at his house. And that was like how he was able to do this for so many years.
Absolutely. And it also brings up that Diddy funded and used his affiliation with local gangs and gang leaders, which for some reason I didn't think of. Like, I didn't think that like Diddy would, I don't want to say need gangs, because I know gangs can be very powerful, but because he had these like one percenters in his pocket, that really surprised me that he would work with like gangs. I don't know if that's like a silly thing to think, but you would think because he has LAPD, he has all these different people in his back pocket, he also wouldn't need street gangs.
It's like he's covered from top to bottom.
Right.
Like, there is no situation in which he is not protected, basically. You go.
I was just going to say, just going back to the freak-offs, they said that freak-offs would be when they would try and solicit sex workers and, like, who could get the most sex workers, like, over to a party.
Jesus Christ. There's a guy named Jose Cruz that is specified in the court docs as his tech guy, and basically like his main responsibility is to set up hidden cameras everywhere and also keep like documents and gatekeep his recordings. So he's known as the gatekeeper of like all these celebrity sex tapes because he was responsible for filming them, basically. So this random man, Jose Cruz, has videos of like the most powerful people in the world hooking up with underage kids and doing drugs.
I don't know if this is just something we've talked about a lot, but has it been proven that Diddy has a bunch of Camrys in his house? Like, did Aubrey O'Day say that?
Oh God, I want to say it was Aubrey. Either Aubrey or like Corinne Steffens. But yeah, it's definitely been alleged.
I think it was like Corinne Steffens.
Yeah. And it's like, we've talked about that so many times. Like, that was a very validating thing to read, because it's like, it's something that I'm shocked people don't think of more often.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how else are you going to blackmail somebody aside from just filming them at a party? You know what I mean? And like, of course, like, if you look at Diddy, even sitting at like an award show or something at like the VMAs and all the people that he's surrounded by, he has tapes of almost every single one of those people doing something bad. That is insane. So then we jump to the racketeering and a little bit more RICO discussion. And I just like wrote these down as direct quotes. It says, defendants have unlawfully increased their profits by luring and deceiving producers, musicians, writers, creators, and artists such as plaintiff to transport drugs such as ecstasy, cocaine, GHB, ketamine, marijuana, and mushrooms, transport firearms, solicit minors, exotic dancers, sex workers, and to utilize their talents and labor to produce music and other tangible goods and services without compensation. And upon information and belief, this RICO enterprise has existed for at least 20 years, dating back to the 1999 nightclub shooting in New York, when Mr. Combs required his then girlfriend, Jennifer Lopez, to transport his illegal firearm into the New York City nightclub. Mr. Combs forced his then artist Shine to assume responsibility for the shooting of several individuals. Mr. Combs used power, money, and influence to bribe jurors, hello, and witnesses such as friend of the shooting victim, Natina Rubin, who reported to law enforcement that she saw Mr. Combs and not Shine pull the trigger and shoot her friend in the face. She later testified at Mr. Combs's criminal trial and she was tying her shoe and may not have seen who shot the gun. She later confessed that he paid her. And then it says Robin Greenhill, the accountant, would ensure the wiring funds transfer or cash payments to sex workers. Frankie Santella, Moy Bond, Brendan Paul, and KK would also be responsible for ensuring payment to sex workers in cash. Young Miami, Jade, Daphne Joy were paid a monthly fee to work as Mr. Combs' sex workers and receive payment via wire transfer from Robin, which outlined defendants' ongoing criminal operations. And yeah, I think that's like another just like major part of this is that they used the mail system to do a bunch of illegal shit. And like, that's really bad, you know?
Totally, totally. Going through the RICO charges, the RICO enterprise continued through the years, including during Mr. Combs' 10-year relationship with his girlfriend, Cassie. According to Ms. Ventura's civil complaint, this RICO enterprise continued in her relationship when Mr. Combs forced her to carry his gun in her purse, forced her to engage in unwanted sexual acts with male prostitutes and sex workers, forced her to consume dangerous amounts of ecstasy, cocaine, GHB, ketamine, marijuana, and alcohol, and paying a member of his security team $5,000 to blow up Kid Cudi's vehicle. The RICO enterprise continued from September 2022 to present day, as evidenced by the hundreds of hours of video and audio recordings in plaintiff's possession. Defendants Sean Combe, Justin Combe, Christina Corum, his assistants and staff all orchestrated, participated, managed, and executed the RICO enterprise by purchasing and distributing ecstasy, cocaine, GHB, ketamine, marijuana, and mushrooms, by purchase and distributing firearms, by requiring the solicitation of sexual encounters with prostitutes and minors, and by forcing artists, creatives, musicians, and producers to utilize their talents and labor to produce music and other tangible goods and services without compensation.
Honestly, all of this just makes me think about all of the people that he's worked with in the past, people that were so not powerful that we would never, people like Dream. Can you imagine what he was doing to the girls of Dream?
Honestly, like Orlando Brown has been trying to tell us this in his own way for such a long time.
I know, poor Orlando Brown, my God.
I know.
But he has, like, he really has. If you can sort of sift through what he's saying, there's always these like big pockets of truth, you know, like something mind blowing. And he has been saying this for a long time. And I'm just like, I just can't believe that we are on the dawn of this moment.
You know who pops into my head immediately too is that guy who didn't make Da Band. Donnie K. Like, he like made sure Donnie K was a solo artist, even though he wasn't in, I think it may have been Day 27 or one of those making the bands. But I want Donnie. I'm like, Donnie, what do you know?
Right. I would love if some of those old people from, even like a, you know, some cast offs from like Danity Kane, even like those girls that, you know, were just put through absolute fucking treachery and like we don't even know their names, so we'll never know what happened to them. Like, they probably all have crazy stories, and I'm also ready for Aubrey O'Day to just write a full ass book. Like, just give us a full book. We're ready.
Yeah, I mean, what sucks is I think a lot of people haven't believed her, and now, you know, I hope that she can also file something against Diddy. I hope all the girls from Danity Kane, Dream, like I said, Da Band, Day 22, 27, whatever, like any of those bands.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they all just financially drain him. Like, that would be ideal, to be honest, because it's like, I don't know how much justice is actually going to be served. Like, is Diddy going to go to prison? That would be a thing to see. I just hope they take all his money.
Totally. I mean, this specific paragraph, it's on, if you're reading along with us, it's on end of 38, start of 39. Defendants Lucian Grange, Ethiopia H, Combs Global, Motown Records, Love Records, and Universal Music Group control and participate in the activities of the enterprise in a variety of ways as set forth, including but not limited to developing and marketing scores of writing camps and listening party services that are marketed to innocent, unassuming artists, creatives, musicians, and producers who are vulnerable and in seek of opportunities. I mean, with Mr. Jones, you're not going to turn down working with Diddy. Like, you're just not. And if Diddy's like, hey, I think you're a great musician, I'd love to talk to you. Diddy has found a way in the public eye, unless you dig like a little bit below the surface, that he is a great businessman and that he is the Donald Trump of rap.
Yeah, and it's really sad to think, like, the artists that we know he's treated bad, just think like how many talented people we never got to hear music from because he just fucked them over, you know? Like, it's so sad to think how many insanely talented people go to his camps and go to his writing, listening parties or whatever the fuck, and have the music industry just like shattered in front of their eyes because of him.
Totally, totally. And I mean, this is allegedly all captured through mail, email, social media. So it doesn't sound like they were even like sneaky about this.
No. People must be freaking the fuck out. The higher ups, the label executives, the politicians that would go to his house, Donald Trump himself. I mean, I cannot even imagine the amount of money that I would pay to get my hands on those tapes of people being debaucherous at his house. I mean, I would give anything to know who was there and who was doing what. And honestly, it reminds me a lot of that blind that we've read like three or four times about like the Diddy celebrity sex parties where
Yes.
they like rent those houses and it's like Jennifer Lopez and Justin Bieber and all these different people like having just like hooking up like crazy, like Madonna. And I believe it. I do.
I don't know how this is going to play out. I mean, there are just so many names that are dropped, basically like telling us about Usher and telling us about Meek Mill, allegedly, if this is all believed to be true. But I mean, Diddy fucked with the wrong person because this person doesn't seem to care about being famous.
Right. And who would
And
have ever?
also is a male. You know, I don't give Cassie any flack for how she went about this. I also just want to like clarify that.
No, for sure. The way that Cassie had to go about this was obviously going to be so different. And like, thank God for her kind of opening up the floodgates. I just hope that a lot of people now feel like they can come forward and talk about this. I will also say that I hope that people get over the initial shock of the idea that somebody like Usher or Chris Brown or whatever in their lifetime could have hooked up with a man. Like, get over that so that we can actually talk about this abuse and how insane this is. And also, it's like not funny and not a joke. The memes about Usher and the memes about Chris Brown and the memes about Justin Bieber, the shit is not funny.
And the thing about Usher, everyone's throwing a sexuality around. I mean, remember everything with like Keke Palmer and her ex? Like, the mom's on video being like, we all know Usher's gay.
Right.
And Usher's just trying to like be on his roller skates.
The way that they were just like, all right, we have to go now because this is a crime scene. But in the okay, the fact that they just fucking up and left, and then the even more insane thing is that they didn't even come back until the next day to take care of it. Like, they were so lax and not worried that they left a bloody crime scene where a person was shot. They just left it and worried about it the next day. They weren't even pressed about cleaning it. Like, what?
They were like, no, we're good. We're good. Don't worry.
He's like, oh God, I forgot I shot that guy. Can you go clean the bathroom?
I know there's also some things about like foreign commerce and affecting the interstate, which I don't know what that means, but it sounds really bad.
Again, we are not liars, as Leah would say. Also, just really quickly, because we haven't mentioned him, I mean, the Virgin Islands of it all. And hello. Hello, Epstein. Like, that's really weird that he was like, he's really comfortable trafficking underage girls, obviously. And he's mostly in the Virgin Islands and basically Miami, New York, and the Virgin Islands and LA. It seems like those were like his stomping grounds.
Do you think Chicago's like, thank God we're left out of this one?
We've enough to worry about with Kanye. Please just stay out of here.
And R. Kelly.
Right. Oh God, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is literally just like you said when I brought up like the gang stuff, it's top down to the street level. Like,
Yeah.
and police are being nay or LAPD as a whole, which I think we already knew. And the Kobe death obviously added like a lot of like fuel to that.
The way that the LAPD just continuously dropped the ball on, especially on anything involving like trafficking and like, you know, under like any kind of like sex crimes, LAPD is just like, we're good. So yeah, we pretty much, for the most part, have covered everything in this 73-page doc. Again, we are going to post it. So if you want to read through on your own, you are more than welcome to.
And to see things like the president of Motown Records right next to sex trafficking really is a jarring thing because we've waited for this with the music industry, and I don't think we're done with the film industry, to be clear, just because
No.
we I almost said killed off Harvey Weinstein, just because we like cut the head off the snake. I don't think, yeah, this is like the Me Too of the music industry.
It's happening. And like I said, I just really hope it empowers people to like feel like they can come forward and not be afraid that they're gonna have their car blown up or something. 'Cause now he can't really do shit like that as easily.
And if you take a plea deal, to if you get a plea deal, take it, like get paid off. Like,
Yeah.
I don't blame people who don't want to go to trial, but tell your story because people are here to believe you.
And do it while he's alive. Like, so many people, I was just watching the Jimmy Savile documentary on
Oh.
Netflix, and like he was basically the UK. I mean, he was like the UK Harvey times a million, like Harvey mixed with Michael Jackson, mixed with Diddy, mixed with every prominent figure we've ever had. And he died before anybody really got to hold him accountable. Like, he died knowing that he tricked everybody. So it's like, you know, get them while you can.
Quick question for you as we like end this episode. Do you think Jay-Z's time? I know that that was part of your predictions, but I really feel like Diddy's gonna name everyone he can.
Honestly, I know that Jay-Z must be freaking the fuck out because he's just a sneeze away. And it's not like people are so willing to make excuses for Jay-Z because they like Beyonce so much. Like, Jay-Z is the lesser of that couple. Nobody cares about him anymore. You know what I mean? Now, if it was Beyonce, it would be a whole different situation, but I think that it's gonna happen. Like, I think that maybe it's a little bit much for right now with everything going on, but I think in the near future, people will start being more interested in his involvement and stuff. But yeah, those were the Diddy court docs. We got through it.
So rotted.
Beyond rotted. Thank you guys for like allowing us to do something a little bit different. I hope that you guys enjoyed this. Enjoy is a weird word. I hope that it was informative.
And also, Patreon listeners, we've like toyed with the idea of diving into feuds, right? Like, we've done an Eminem episode, haven't done Mariah Carey yet, but would love to like just do an episode purely on their feud, or, you know, J-Lo, Mariah, Nicki, just keep saying like her Tommy Mottola, but like just something a little different than blinds, because we understand that when we're reading blinds where it's 50 in a row being like he cheated, even though we just did Nick Lachey, which I actually had fun with. But
Yeah.
we do get that listening to that a million times in a row can get old. So if you're open to, you know, diving into a feud or diving into any like different things, like conspiracy theories. Maybe we're not fluently forward, so we're not gonna step on her toes, but things like that.
And we're open to suggestions. So if you have any, feel free to leave them in the comments. Yeah, we're open.
And we appreciate you guys for hanging out, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Thank you.